Let me start out by saying that this is a special meeting we've called for the purposes of holding a public hearing to discuss the repositioning, redistricting of the Commissioner's Court precincts to assure that we're in compliance with the Voting Rights Act and with the mandates for population and one man, one vote and so forth. And your input is certainly appreciated here this morning. Mr. Bob Bass with the law firm of Allison Bass is going to give us an overview of the proposed map that has been discussed with the Commissioner's Court members, and which will be open for your comment. We've got a microphone up here, so if when you get ready, after he's given us an overview, then please feel free to come up and give any input you have. I want to start out by thanking Lamar State College Port Arthur for furnishing these facilities for us at no charge, which is something that's near and dear to the Commissioner's Court. But thank each of you for being here. And Mr. Bass, I'll just let you go forward.
Thank you, Governor. A little bit about redistricting, what it is and why we do it. Redistricting arises out of a constitutional foundation found in Section Article 1, Section 2 of the Federal Constitution, which applies to the reapportionment of the United States Congress after each federal census. That has been in our Constitution since the inception of the country, and its purpose is to ensure that each vote cast in the House of Representatives has the same number of people behind it, so that the representation of the various regions of the country are equally represented. Over time, that concept of proportional numerical representation has been handed down to smaller governmental units. And in the case of the Commissioner's Court, Texas came under that mandate in 1968 to 1972 as a result of the case that went to the Supreme Court known as Avery versus Midland County. In that case, Midland is one of the square counties up in the panhandle area of the state. It had been divided historically and as a common practice into four quadrants of equal size without regard to population. The city of Midland was located wholly within one commissioner's precinct and had about 30 of the county's 35,000 people at the time living in the city of Midland. Mr. Avery was a member of the city council of Midland, and he filed a lawsuit challenging that procedure on the basis that it took about 15,000 people to elect a commissioner in one precinct, but only 500 people to elect a commissioner in another precinct. And he said that that disparity of population and the weight, one five-hundredths of a vote could elect in the one precinct, 1/15,000th of a vote is what your weight of your vote was in the two different districts. And he said that violated the Equal Protection Clause. The Supreme Court eventually agreed, and so Texas Commissioner's Court became obligated to look at their boundaries after each census to determine how close to being numerically balanced they were. At today, virtually all governmental entities that have single member districts that elect their representative body, and I use the term representative body in a legal sense, representative bodies are mandated to be balanced. So that means the policy making body of a governmental entity, such as the city council, the school board, the commissioner's court, the state legislature, people who make policy for that entity, have to be numerically balanced. Other offices, such as judicial offices, JPs, constables, district court judges, do not. They don't set policy. They enforce the law, but they don't make law. And so they're not deemed to be subject to the requirement of proportional representation. So, after the release of the census data, we look at that data and determine what the population of the county is under the latest census count. As a result of that count, Jefferson County has 252,273 people in the 2010 census.
Turn it this way. What we do is we take the total population, we divide it by four, the number of seats that are in the representative body, the commissioner's court. The judge is elected at large, so we don't count it as a five-member seat. We do, it's four, because we have four members that are elected from districts. We then determine how close we are to the ideal size. And in this case, we find that district one was overpopulated by 4,724 people. District three was undercounted by 7,997. That means there is a top to bottom range of about 20.17%. That's the range from overpopulation to the most underpopulated. Anything above 10% is deemed to be presumptively unconstitutional. So that is the first benchmark or threshold that the county has to look at. If they're within 10%, they're under no duty to change their boundaries. But if they're more than 10%, then they do have an obligation to look at redrawing those lines in such a way that they rebalance the population, moving the boundary to take in more population in the underpopulated area, shedding population in the overpopulated areas. So once you decide that you're going to have to make change, then any change that you make has to comply with the Voting Rights Act. The Voting Rights Act is designed to preserve minority voting rights, and minorities are not numerical minorities. They're ethnic, race, or language minorities under the statute. So that is the standard that we're going to look at when we do the drawing of our boundaries. The ethnicity of your county is about 45% Anglo, about 33.2% Black, and about 16.5% Hispanic. So you would expect to see with that kind of distribution, probably two districts in which minorities would have a majority interest in the population, and probably two districts that were more Anglo-dominated, if you can. So, and that's what we see. Now, this is before we began any adjustments. We have districts three and four are largely minority-dominated, with Precinct 3 having 24.9% Anglo, 39.25% Black, and 29% Hispanic, with about a 5% Asian component. Precinct 4 is 15.5% Anglo, 64% Black, and about 16% Hispanic. Districts 1 is 58% Anglo, 25% Black, 10% Hispanic. District 2 is about 78% Anglo, 4% Black, 12% Hispanic. All right, let's look at the method that the county has decided to use to address that imbalance. I'm going to turn on a layer of voting blocks. It's a little easier to see where the areas of change are. In this case, this is the county. One of the problems is the county is sort of a parfait glass. The population is layer in layers. And so when you have a population that has precinct one is overpopulated, and precinct three in the south is underpopulated, you can see the difficulty is you have to migrate that population through the county. You have to shed population out of one. That results in excess population in four, because four is slightly overpopulated itself, but you have to move population out of one and then shed that population on the south side of four into two, and two was overpopulated. So then you have to take population out of the south side of two to eventually get it into four. So it's a complicated thing in concept, not that difficult in this particular case, because we moved whole voting boxes, and a whole voting box typically has upwards of between 1,000 and 4,000 people. And so what was done is we moved in, let me zoom in to the area up here, and if I remember correctly, we moved box 7 and 89 that had been in box 1 into precinct 4. And then down in this area in south of precinct 4, precinct 67 was moved into,
people here, since you don't have a superimposition of roadways on here, it may be difficult for you to understand, but this, where's 89 and 7? Right here, 89 and 7, Commissioner Alford, that's going to be Old Town, correct?
Old Town.
So this box 6 here is roughly Interstate 10 and Calder Avenue up in Beaumont that bisects this box right here. So this 7 and 89 is roughly the Old Town area, and then I-10 comes around here and curves and goes easterly towards Orange.
In box 67, which is a big box, we took out this portion that you see where the yellow lines reflect the boundaries of the box, and we took out this southern portion of box 67. We also took out some of the territory here in box 64, went over into out of four. And by moving that population into two, we then came down here to box 61 and moved this part out of, this box had been in two, it was moved into precinct three.
Box 61 is the area that is bounded by Memorial, goes in front of the old Thomas Jefferson High School, and then goes easterly over to Highway 73, the old First Bank and Trust area down to Gulfway Drive, that triangle.
And so just a part of box 61 was shaded and left over, and then that's at the Parkway, East Parkway, Highway 73. That area that's north of 73 was left in Precinct 2. The bulk of that district was moved into District 3. And by making those adjustments, we were able to reach an acceptable level of balance. In this plan, the deviation has gone from 20% down to 4.29%, and the ethnicity of the resulting districts, Precinct 1 is 59.37% Anglo, 25% Black, 4% Asian, 9.5% Hispanic. District 2 is 77% Anglo, 7% Black, 12% Hispanic. District 3 is 26.12% Anglo, 37.86% black and 29.68% Hispanic, about nearly 5% Asian. District 4 is 16.79% Anglo, 63.14% black, and 16.5% Hispanic. Going back to the map, and I'm going to turn off the transportation layer simply because it gets a little bit cluttered when I have that on, and demonstrate where these populations are most dominant. The Hispanic population, and well, you don't see too well on this this shading area down in the south end of 2 and in 3, the black population tends to be pretty heavily concentrated in the north end of District 4 and in the Port Arthur area. Let's zoom in a little bit. Up here, you can see this shading in these boxes represents minority populations. This is more of a distribution chart as opposed to a density chart, meaning that it's just showing where the percentages of minorities are. Sometimes a census block will show to be shading with minority. It may only be 4 people in the block, 3 of which are Hispanic or black, 75% minority, but it may not be a lot of people. So this doesn't really tell us where the heaviest it does, but it's not always easy to see. Look at the chart and determine those things. The blue is a little hard to see. I might want to change my coloring on the it's a little better. And then down in the Port Arthur area, of course, we have pretty heavy concentrations, black and Hispanic there. So this distribution of minority populations, we believe, will satisfy the Voting Rights Act. It preserves incumbents in offices to which they have been elected. It, for the most part, keeps communities intact. And those are most of the objectives that we try to accomplish in the plan. That's a very quick summary of the proposal. If you have questions about the process or the legal procedures, I'd be glad to answer any questions that the court or the public may have. Yes, ma'am.
You said on precinct 67 that you moved to the commission of precinct 2, you only took a part of that precinct?
I believe we, 67? Yes, ma'am.
61.
And, well, 67 and 61 have been modified. Let me see if I can. And 64, right. Here is 67, and I don't know if you can. It runs, it's a big box. We've taken out this lower portion and shed just this lower portion into 2. Likewise in box 64, is it? No, it's 21, I'm sorry. You can see where the yellow lines are, and then there where there is color that's not bounded by a yellow line, that means that we've taken a piece out of that box. So it's box 21 was slightly altered. And then over here in the Port Arthur area, box 61, right here, let me zoom in on that. You can see the box, the whole box, with the exception of the part north of 73, goes into precinct 3. And those shifts accomplish about something on the order of 11,000 people to had to be shifted in order to bring balance to the plan. Yes, sir.
Is it possible that, you know, the split precinct issue, just from a management standpoint of elections and even voter registration, is it possible just because we're dealing with numbers, we're going to have some confusion? And Carolyn, you can maybe speak to this a little bit. Is it possible just with the numbering for those that are effectively split as proposed right now to just go ahead and include them in one of the precincts that they're actually attached to, so that it just makes it easier for both the voters and for the management of voter registration and the elections as well? Because people are used to, when you split a precinct and they, one person on one side of the street may be voting in one, when I say precinct, let's say box. They may be voting in one commissioner precinct and then their neighbor across the street is voting in another, and they have to be in the same box. Just from a, is there any real impact in just changing the numbering so that we can eliminate some of that confusion?
Well, where there is a split box, for example, this portion of 61, it will be realigned most likely with box 60.
So those that live in that green section of current 60,
they will get a new voter registration card that will say you're in box 60. And they will vote at the polling place for 60.
And that goes to the meat of the question.
Yeah, and that way, I mean, I don't, will there be confusion? Sure. People, despite the rhetoric, people don't really get along well with change. They're going to say, well, I've always voted here, now you're telling me I go there. So people don't particularly like, but their voter registration card that they get, those will go out in December. And so they should be self-explanatory.
So, Ms. Guidry, is this going to be an opportune time? And one of the problems that we discussed the other day is the fact that we have a lot of voting boxes where we may have two or three people in the whole box. And so she is forced to go hire and pay for election judges and voting machines and everything, and they're not used. You know, there's not enough people there. And one of the things that she's looking at is consolidating boxes so that we'll have an efficient usage of the machines and the manpower that she's required to muster for the purposes of an election. So is this going to be a good time for us to look at
this? Yes, definitely so. And that's when we're waiting to see where the lines will be drawn. I understand what Shane is saying, the confusion about the voters. If I live on this side of the street, I'm in 61, but if I live on this side of the street, I'm in 60. My question would be, are the numbers so great that even including that whole precinct, would it not still bring us within the deviation, within that 10% limit, where we could just move the entire box rather than split a box?
Well, we didn't split the box casually. We had to split the boxes to get the deviation down. We tried to bring the deviation down below 5%.
Okay.
And that gives you room for the next decade to have a little more headroom. And so hopefully you won't have to draw a line, redraw again in 10 years. It's most likely you will, but we try to bring the deviation under 5% for that reason. So we weren't able to get the deviation that low without splitting the box. And we worked on that. I've sat down a couple of times and we've worked remotely. And
so when you're looking at numbers, were you looking at just strictly population or voting population?
Well, redistricting is done on population. The voting boxes are typically sized. You can go up to 5,000 voters. Now, a voting box cannot have territory for more than one commissioner's precinct, JP precinct, state rep, state senate, state board of education, or in cities with single member districts with a population over 10,000, their ward lines. So when you start laying those other lines in, it's where the sliver districts that you're talking about come from. And we would have to look, once we lay all of those lines in, just how many boxes, but we need to consolidate. You've got a lot of boxes, and if it's possible to consolidate, it would be a good opportunity
right
to do it.
There are precincts with one voter.
Right, but in the case of 61, if I'm not mistaken, Carolyn, y'all would know better, 61 before the change would, 60 would be a heavy populated area.
Right.
Dividing it by 73, which is something me and Commissioner Weaver agreed on, allows them, I don't know if they vote at Taft, or I think Taft is the area, Taft Elementary is the area they vote at. Now, I don't know, north of 73, if those people came, did 60 go to Taft, or, so it still can be designed where it's a heavily populated precinct, I mean, a voting precinct, box, but they still probably will be going to the same place. I don't see it changing. On mine, I don't know about Commissioner Alphas and Commissioner Weaver's change, but that shouldn't be a drastic change because you got a highway first, a major highway going through that, which is 73, which is one reason we chose to divide that box at that junction. One of the reasons. Rose Elementary.
And then 61 and 43 were combined at West Grove Education Center. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to have, I guess, part of that 61 point all going over to Rose Elementary.
Okay.
Now you can consolidate polling places and have multiple boxes voting at a common place.
That's what I'm saying. It still would be a general area.
We try to take, yes, sir.
I was just curious, is there a chance that we could get a copy of this documentation? Out here is just a lot of numbers and possibilities. They're kind of hard to track down what they said. By this, we can see it here, but I'm trying to put, location, identify the locations to what you're talking about. It's easy if I had something, a hard copy we can look at.
I have a map and some data that we can probably have available to you. I'm not sure.
How does the general public get to comment or challenge any of this if they don't have
it? We're having a hearing at 1:15 up at the Commissioner's Court in Beaumont, and I have extra copies in my office, so I'll be happy to give you what I have.
And I'll be available also, Ms. Mosley, to. It's been an ongoing process, so it's still not in stone, but.
So what, I understand that you mentioned it would be done in December because people are getting the new voter registration card, what you said?
Well, we need to adopt a plan here pretty quickly so we can submit it for pre-clearance. The process is that once the commissioners adopt a set of commissioners' court boundaries, we then have a hard line that we can work with, meaning that until we know what the boundaries are going to be, it's very difficult to consolidate boxes. So this plan, if it's approved by the Commissioner's Court, we will then solidify those lines and then begin the process of laying in the JP lines, the city ward lines, and then conforming the voting boxes to those lines. Once that's done, the court will adopt a supplemental order that approves the new polling places, the new voting boxes, the new JP precinct lines. And then all of that will go to the Department of Justice for preclearance. The Department of Justice has 60 days in which to preclear. So filing period begins in November, so we really need to have this submitted no later than the 1st of September. But the earlier we can get it approved and submitted, the quicker the voter registrar can begin preparing her voter registration cards, telling people the new boxes that they vote in.
So does that allow the voter or the public the opportunity to submit suggestions and ideas and make up these plans?
That's what we're having the public hearing for, yes, sir, so we can receive comment. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I think there are copies available.
Yeah, Ms. Mosley, you can have mine.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You can have mine. I have an extra. Which one you gave it to me?
I gave it to you.
To be able to.
We have to send them out by December 6th, and there's a lot of realigning all of that voter registration guidance.
I gave them both of them, I just kept them.
Okay, that's two BIA actually.
Okay.
Just two. It's a small one.
That's all right. Then no big deal.
As a boundary line.
state, for example, they had a portal where people could go and look online at proposals. Is this program here, is there a new type feature that people could hyperlink to on the internet to go and look at?
I don't have a hyperlink. The county has a website, I presume, that a map can be, a PDF map that can be zoomed in on can be provided, yes, sir.
Propose.
We'll gladly make copies and have them available in our office as well for people to just pick up.
If we can get it, we can scan it and put it on the webpage if you like.
Do you wanna talk to Mr. Seaholm about that?
Yes, sir.
T.I. Morningstar from Breeze Radio. I'm sitting here and I'm listening, and I wanna speak from a grassroots person's point of view. And the ambiguity of what I call gerrymandering, it's the same as in the 21st century redistricting. To sit here and listen, and I, no offense to anybody, I've had a problem with the U.S. Census, even when it came out and the whole questionnaire, because I am aware of people who live in this city who deliberately did not fill out the census, and I know it's based on numbers. I'm aware of sanctuary guidelines that are in this area, people who also moved and maybe increased in one of the other districts, precincts, or whatever it is, in terms of flight from an area. In the 21st century, we refer to citizens as Anglos, Hispanics, Asian, and then throw in a color, black. I know you have to go to the Justice Department. So when you do this, I would submit to you that you let the Justice Department, and while you're drawing your lines, understand the ambiguity, the uncertainty of the fact that there are people in this city and in these precincts that did not fill out census reports. And at the same time, 10 years ago, we had a contention about redistricting. And today I look around and I'm aware that there are people that are concerned, but because of the apathy, they are not here to express their grievances. But they do express their grievances to me, in my neighborhoods, and on the radio. So I would like for you, I'm just suggesting that you look at that whole 21st century concept of socialization and begin to address those issues. Now, it's not just about drawing lines, it's about people's lives.
I've been working with the census data for 30 plus years, and I'd be the first to admit that it's not, it's the best method I guess we have to estimate, which is really all it is an estimation of what populations we have. But the government, and I say the government in a broad sense, from top to bottom, federal down to the local level, have to have some methods for estimating demands on services and the like. And so it's important to know where the people are and best we can determine. The census does have what's known as sampling procedures involved, which is a demographic statistical estimate of uncounted population. But to tell you that it's bulletproof accurate, no, I wouldn't sit here and tell you that. It's merely a best of estimate of population that we've got.
Right, and just an addendum to that, I'm not suggesting that, I understand what you say it's not bulletproof, but what I'm suggesting that you who are the rule makers consider those things, because it doesn't have to be bulletproof, but it has to be some kind of compassion and understanding of excellence, what is needed rather than what is desired. That's all I'm saying. I didn't mean to put that on.
You know, the the process that we go through every 10 years is somewhat interesting to me, and we're sort of talking philosophy here to some extent. The Voting Rights Act was passed in 1964 to address demonstrated discrimination. And over the years, we've made significant progress. And economically, as people's lives have improved somewhat over that time, particularly with minority populations, it's not uncommon to see people moving out of traditional neighborhoods. And so, but every 10 years, we then have to re-aggregate people by racial characteristics. And it seems to me, and I'll confess before God and everybody else that I'm sort of a liberal, and that's not always a popular thing to be in some places. But I think the Civil Rights Act has been a very great thing for our country. At the same time, every 10 years, we have, there seems to be a conflicting dynamic there in that our laws prohibit discrimination, and yet every 10 years we have to recategorize people by racial characteristics. And that's just an observation.
I don't want to belabor the point, but you brought a good point. And see, this is the thing. 1964, the act, Lyndon Johnson signed and all that kind of stuff. But he signed it only for 20 years. And every 20 years you got to go back and try to get it done again. And with all the people that understand that voting, to vote, it should be sovereign, period. So when we do that, we have to understand that when it was ratified, it wasn't ratified, we're down south. And for a lot of reasons, it was not ratified or even agreed upon sovereignty. In the South, it was really to protect some things. So we have to go back every 20 years to get the right to vote, and all these people keep going to Washington, going to politics and all that kind of stuff, and nobody says, okay, bam, let's stop the madness and just deal with what is real. And I agree with you, liberal, conservative, whatever, Republican, Democrat, whatever, there is a need in the communities, grassroots people who are written, and forget all this stuff about tea parties and all that kind of stuff. There's a need because the people are very disgruntled and apathetic about how our government runs. And most of the time, they see the contention that some of these things are being done because of personal agendas and not for service to the people.
I have one other question.
Yes, ma'am.
Moving these precincts around, have you also taken a look at what effect that has on the JPs, since they're not dedicated to particular commissioners? They're kind of
different, yeah. Well, of course, JPs and commissioners are made up of voting blocks or voting boxes. So once we have the commissioners' lines, there may be some slight modification of the JP lines because we've reshaped some of the voting boxes. But we've looked at that, and I don't think we're affecting any of the incumbents. And so their boundaries might be very slightly different, but not remarkably so. Does that answer your question?
Kind of, sort of. Because the JP doesn't necessarily, a JP shares sometimes the different commissioners, for instance, you'll have an overlapping Commissioner 2 and Commissioner 3 for one JP.
What I will do once we get the commissioner's line set, I will then do a JP set of lines and see where there's overlap and if there's any voting boxes that are split. And if I don't think there will, but we'll get to that. I just have to take things in steps.
Right, okay. So we basically just look at the commissioners right now.
Right. I have to have at least one, there's three different layers of data, commissioners, voting boxes, and JPs. I have to have at least one of those fixed before I can make the others work. And so until there's a set line for the commissioners, I can't conform the boxes. Timeline, like I say, we need to submit this no later than the 1st of September. I'd like to get it done sooner rather than later. It needs to go to Washington. They have 60 days, so hopefully if we can get it in by September 1st, they'll have pre-cleared it by November 1st. It then filing period opens November 12th, so we're on a pretty tight deadline.
So what is the process for the public's response to the initial proposed plan? In other words, once the commissioners have decided, okay, here, because I see I have two proposed plans here, correct? Is that what this is? Two proposed plans?
Well, there are one. I think there's just one, Plan 2B. One plan was an early draft, and one was the 2B is the only plan that right now is being considered.
I think if you look at 2B and 2, there may be another difference, and Mr. Bass, please jump in if I may, but the main difference in them is that under 2B is the one, the main difference between 2 and 2B, I think, is that the city of Taylor Landing is included in Precinct 2 rather than Precinct 3.
On the west. Oh, okay, you need 2. Here you go.
2B.
There you go. That's 2 and 2C. You got Plan 2.
2 and
2B.
Okay.
And the difference is Taylor's
Landing. So when we get a copy of the original, the way the county sits right now, probably on the computer, on the internet, and compare that with the proposed plan.
You can. The current voters' precincts are located on the internet at the county for each precinct box. I'm sorry, not precinct. And if you go on the internet, if you go on the Jefferson County website, you have each of our precincts there, and it'd be in color. They have a map there, each boundary's lined out.
Thank you. That's what I was getting at. The point I guess I'm trying to make is the fact that once you all have decided on the proposed plan, then you're saying that you're going to have a public hearing, and that's something that you're going to suggest to the public. This is the proposed plan you'd like to see submitted to Washington. My question was, how much time does the president have to respond to the proposed plan? So if this is something that the public said, well, you know, we're not too sure about it. We want to look at this a little bit further, but you're saying as a deadline. So
when would we,
time sequence.
Mr. Bass, when would we adopt the order on the commissioner's lines? I mean, what's your desire as far as timeline goes for when the commissioner's court would take up the issue of voting on the order?
I need to, again, know what boundary we're going to adopt as soon as you reasonably can make a decision. Now, if we receive substantive comment at the public hearings, meaning a issue that is raised that is substantive, people are never exactly happy with any change, but if there's a substantive objection, then we would want some time to look at it.
And may I ask, what do you mean when you say substantive? Is that something that someone feels or group of people feel that it's not in the best interest of their representative or the number of people in that district?
Well, any objection is substantive, but sometimes it's, and I'm just using a hypothetical, some people say, well, I don't like this line because I used to vote at a certain location. Now I've got to go further. I don't like that. Well, you've got to draw a line somewhere, and the fact that somebody doesn't like it because it's possibly less convenient to them may not mean that it's not a good plan. It's just less convenient for a small number of people. Another objection might be this plan divides a neighborhood. Well, that's a more substantive because it affects a larger number of people. Now, we've tried not to do that based best efforts, but I'm not going to say we haven't done some of that. But so I guess some objections are less substantive than others, and if it raises a legal issue primarily that might pose a hindrance to preclearance, then it's something we'll want to give consideration. I don't know if that answers your question, but not every objection we receive is,
What I'd like to know, and I think would answer this question also, Judge, would we physically have to put this on the agenda and say, okay, we're gonna adopt Plan 2B? Mm-hmm. So that would get a timeline, Mr. Mosley, on where we're headed. Then would we put a workshop on after we adopt it officially on the Commissioner's Court agenda and set a timeline for another public hearing between 9 and September 1st is, I believe, pretty much what would, so would we, how would we do that?
It's not my intention, or I don't think we really have time to do another public hearing.
Okay.
We would receive public comment and again make some modification if again it was the judgment of the court that we needed to.
Even if the public hearing is tied into, and I'm asking for legalities on this, public hearing is tied into the a commissioner's court, is that legal where they can come to the commissioner's court the Monday, say we adopted this Monday or the following Monday, then the following Monday we have a public hearing scheduled. Is that legal? That's what I'm asking.
My contention is this. Well, that'd be. We don't get to the point where we're rushing something on the people because it's got to be in a certain period of time to adjust the part. The point you mentioned earlier was the fact that you want to make sure the people are properly represented. If they're properly represented, then they should have proper representation in terms of being able to speak up and say what they're for and not for. Whether it's substantive to your determination, or whether it's mine. My determination is substantive. Information may be that this may affect my precinct or my precinct position for his job. You know, and so.
Sure.
Because he's gaining more.
He's not losing. He ain't gaining more. The court who has to take this and decide whether, okay, we'll look at this and maybe we should look at this, maybe we should move some other people back out of this district or something, or precinct or whatever, but you have to give the public an opportunity.
Mr. Mosley.
I'm not trying to hold.
No, I understand, but this is what this is for.
Just the impression that I'm getting here because it seems like it's being rushed.
No, it's not being rushed, and we'll make sure you guarantee that it's not being rushed. But this, to answer your question, Commissioner Senegal and I sit down with Mr. Bass for about a 4-hour period on one setting, and sit with him a couple other times. Commissioner Weaver, Commissioner Arnold. Had the same opportunity, and we even had dialogue through the internet to make sure that we were looking at it for the betterment of all of the commissioners and the citizens as a whole. We will also have an opportunity for the public when it goes to Washington. If you don't feel comfortable with it, you have an opportunity there to say something because they will be contacting people. Right now, you will receive this opportunity to review that. I think Mr. Bass said that we're on a short time frame, but it is strictly because of a lot of things happening in Austin, Texas, that we couldn't move on. So it is on a good time frame. Where if you have some concerns, you still have an opportunity to make sure Commissioner Senegal know, myself, the judge know, Commissioner Weaver, or Commissioner Arnold over there. Because those things that we get from the public, we consider as very important, the input we get back from you.
You know, I appreciate that's what I'm saying. Because we know, too, there are a lot of things going on. And sometimes when we jump into a process to get things done because we want to be prepared, voting on those come up. Sometimes the public is left out and they have to deal with the residue of those decisions that are made for them without their having voted.
And we are, and I'm sorry that the process works this way. We get the census data, we have a legislative session, we're all running around. Mr. Bass is performing calculations that are pretty complicated and require him to look at a whole bunch of different issues. And when he finally finished with that, then we faced with the tax assessor collector having to have his voter registration cards out between November and December. So in that sense, we are in a kind of a rush. What brought this about was the fact that because of population shifts, we had greater than 10% deviation. Otherwise, we wouldn't even had to go through the process. But what happened is that Port Arthur, and I think this was brought about several different factors, some by white flight, some by damage and destruction that was caused by Hurricane Rita and Hurricane Ike. So we had a loss in Port Arthur, 3,937 people, brought his precinct down below the population numbers. Mr. Bass explained to you this parfait-like constitution of the county population. So Commissioner Arnold's up there in the northwest end of the county, somewhat overpopulated. He had to push some of that down into four. So the change that we had there is in that from one to four was that St. Elizabeth Hospital, Central High School, Old Town, Beaumont area from one into four. And four had to give up some to two. The big loser in population was Commissioner Weaver here at the end of the day. Took an area just to the south of Lamar University from Precinct 4, moved that down into 2. Then from Precinct 2, moved that Groves area over into Precinct 3 to give him enough voters. If you look, and we've got a separate sheet that shows you the before and after demographic information, that'll show you that those changes that were made preserve the ethnicity of the areas, and those are normally where the main disputes come in amongst elected officials or commissioner's court is, you know, are we making a change that at the end of the day is going to take a historically minority precinct and make it non-minority? And we're convinced in these circumstances that we preserve that identity, whether or not that should be our focus is another issue altogether, but we're doing it in a way to comply with federal law. So I want to give you an open invitation to come up to my office. I've got all the maps and everything. I'll give you all the charts but in one sense, yes, we are in a somewhat of a hurry to get that order adopted by the commissioner's court and get it to the Department of Justice. My guess is that the Department of Justice is going to look at it pretty closely, too.
Yeah, I've had some education on that, too. let me just say this, and with all due respect to my boss here, this, we have to understand something. This is Port Arthur, okay? Very few people come in contact with you as a group in Port Arthur. I watch the news and I watch y'all on TV and everything. And there's a lot of people in Beaumont that come to y'all meetings and everything. You can look around here. This is an elephant here. The thing is that I have been talking about redistricting ever since the last election. People hear, but they don't pay attention. So that's why you have these empty chairs here. You don't have enough time to. This process has been going in effect for over a year. But the communication among the people, I only read it in the paper yesterday. So we need to look at that in terms of how the decisions that you have to make are being communicated. We can go on the internet, everybody in computer. Everybody, Port Arthur is an aged community, okay? Much of Neyland, much of Groves Formation, they're an aged community. If you don't have activists, that's how you got it right. If you don't have activists, that's the fun, bro.
Yeah.
If you don't have activists, community activists, that actually are involved and can get the word out, communicating with you, and then communicating with the grassroots people, you're not gonna have participation as you desire. And you're up against the clock to do what you gotta do. You see, So we can go around this, you know, agreeing and disagreeing, but not being disagreeable. But it's communication on how you present these things. And that's what the problem is.
Right, and if you look around the room, Morning Star, I think Channel 6 was here. There's no, as far as I know, there's no Port Arthur News, no more, no, maybe, they may be at the 1 o'clock, so I'm not going.
And all they go do is report that you was here.
Okay, yeah, so.
There's no dialogue.
So, and one thing that I want to emphasize too, Mr. Mosley, 3,937 people left Port Arthur in the last 10 years. Living in Port Arthur all my life, I have to assume, I'm very comfortable assuming that's African-Americans and Hispanics. This was, and I've learned a lot in this process. It's my first redistricting that I went through, and I promise you, I think I'm understanding even more today than I did the last 4 or 5 months that we've been going over it. I don't think anyone on the court's been through it, has it? But they were more astute about it because they, Beaumont's more involved, I'm going to say that, in Port Needle and Port Nature. But I have to assume that was African-Americans. So if you grew up here, I've been knowing you all my life, Commissioner Weaver's precinct is predominantly Caucasian, white. And for me to try and regain 4,000 African-Americans is almost impossible without just cutting him in half and reaching up there in Commissioner Alpha's precinct. That's something we battle with.
And the law states that you can't cut a precinct in half.
In half. So the timeline is critical, but we've been going back and forth on Commissioner Weaver, can I have this, and can we do this, and can we do this? This is more palatable. They really, at first, Mr. Bass was giving me quite a bit of needling. And being, like I said, the media's not here, but I said to them, I didn't want it. I wanted an area
that I wasn't going to give it up.
Yeah. I wanted an area that I was kind of familiar with, graduating from TJ, working, living in that area. I know people in that area. And he said, okay, Commissioner, let's. So it's been an agreement and a work between us that's been going to do just what you're saying, to try and preserve the seat, not just for myself, but any minority that may come after me, because Port Arthur's minority city. And that's why, so believe me, we've been beating this thing.
And remember, we have to follow the rule of the law.
That's it.
As you look at these voting boxes, and that goes into saying you can't be cutting these commissioner precincts in half. That's just common sense. You don't do that. It's you can't do it. So, you know.
And all I'm saying is that needs to be communicated
right.
to the people.
You're right.
Because they would see one thing. The perception is 99% of average. And if they see something that they think is being done arbitrarily, then you get the whole thing about voting apathy. That's why a lot of people don't get involved. I mean, I'm just giving you a sociological concept. Maybe philosophy, but it's the truth.
I have a question regarding law, and this may be more for Mr. Bass. I'm Caleb Brown, the election coordinator. And in the years working in elections in the state, I've become a bit of a pessimist. Worst case scenario, this held up in the adoption process. How long do we have as a county before the DOJ or the governing authority deems our next election unconstitutional?
Well, we have self-published a finding that says that our plan is unconstitutional. And so I fully expect, if we don't get pre-cleared, that we will either file our own suit to get judicial relief, or somebody will file a suit to enjoin an election. That's worst case scenario. I anticipate one of the advantages is the county has historical history of electing minorities. That helps, and if there's support among the minority community of the plan, that helps. So I'm hoping we can get good support, and the plan will go through without much problem. We've had good success in the past. Our firm has represented Jefferson County in the last census, and maybe even 10 years before that.
Yeah, 10 years before that, and I think.
So we've had good success, and I think the effort that's been made, I can't speak to communication of the plan and the effort, but I can assure you that hours have been spent trying to draft plans that take into account the interest of the whole community as the county as a whole, but to preserve representation, to preserve communities and the like. So it's not been something that's been undertaken lightly. Each of the commissioners now, and I have them on my cell phone, so I mean, I've talked to all of them many times in the last few weeks, and I've been down here and we've spent considerable time on this project. And it's a complicated community. And like I say, just the historic stratification of the precinct lines has all, you know, if I had a blank sheet of paper, the lines would look a lot different. But I don't. I'm somewhat bound by what has gone before, and I have to stay pretty much within those. And I think we've done that.
Yeah, and you know, here again, our information, you know, my best concern is that the public has an opportunity.
Well, I think the court's not going to adopt the plan today. Yeah. It will, but it needs to do it fairly quickly. So if you have comment, you need to.
Yeah, because also, you know, you're saying that there are other things, other lines that have to be drawn, and they also affect JP. And so there again, you know, you have a situation where obviously, you know, population and complexion population does make a difference. And that's our intent.
I don't anticipate the JP lines will be any more than cosmetically different. They'll be very substantively the change. There will be a few people affected, one JP to the other, but it's going to be very minimal.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Okay. Marks, I want to remind you too that the agenda is always posted 72 hours in advance. So whenever they decide to put that agenda item on the commission court meeting to adopt the plan, then hopefully it'll be available to come to that meeting, and you can always speak at that meeting.
Yeah, definitely.
I would just like to say, use the word African American in the 21st century. That would be great. See, because that's what Thurgood Marshall said. but
my nomenclature comes out of the census data, so
yeah, I know. And see, that whole thing, you know, look.
Yep.
Well, thank y'all so much for being here today. We are going to have another meeting at 1:15 in the Commissioner's Court on the fourth floor. Thanks again to Lamar University and to our sound man. And
good job.
We appreciate your input.